All right, how's everybody doing? Welcome to Wednesday, May 14th. Hopefully everybody's doing well, everybody's staying safe, everybody's staying healthy, everybody's staying socially distant from each other, and you're enjoying the beautiful outside, man. It is gorgeous outside, so if you have a chance, get outside, enjoy it. Just before we bring on our very special guest, I'm excited. Bobby Broom is going to join us in 1 second, but I wanted to make sure that everyone knew. I always say this at the top of the show. We've got a special COVID-19, the GoFundMe links are up. They're on Chicago Music Revealed. I've heard a lot of great comments from people checking in. A lot of people are able to throw 5, 10, 15, 20 bucks on some of those venue staff, some of the musicians, some of the different organizations. You know, everybody is in the same boat here in the entertainment business and the entertainment industry. And so we've all got to kind of stick together. That's one of the reasons why I started the show Chicago Music Revealed, so we could all connect throughout all the different genres. Like, we had Patrick Wembley on yesterday, and that was great. He was talking all about the indie rock scene and about all the different things that are happening in the clubs. But today we're getting back into the jazz scene, and I'm real happy to have Bobby Broom. Bobby, how are you? We just brought you up on the screen, and you are there live.
All right. Hey, I'm okay. I'm all right. How are you?
Well, we're hanging in there, right? It's the only thing we can do at this this moment in time. Now, before we get into this special show that you're doing tomorrow night for the Jazz Foundation of America, and we're going to talk all about this stuff, but you know, you've performed all over the world, toured with, you know, unbelievable amounts of, you know, well-known legendary musicians, plus you tour with your own group extensively. But have you ever seen anything like what's happening right now in the music industry? I mean, this is unprecedented, isn't it?
And not since 1920, right? Like, my son brought me this thing he found on the internet the other night. He's like, "Dad, look at this." Actually, he texted it to me from upstairs. Real. We're social distancing even in the house. But it was about how every 100 years there's this, you know, plague. You know, so it was one in 1820, one in 1920, you know, Spanish flu, and then this, and it's like uncanny. 1720, there was something.
Yeah.
You know, so no, not in my lifetime. And my dad was born in 1919, so would have been not in. It's like a once in a lifetime thing. He missed this one, but you know.
Yeah, lucky us, huh?
Yeah, some people have had to deal with two of these, I guess, if they live long enough.
God, man. You know, have you ever been, when you're touring, because I'm thinking of this right now while we're talking about it, but I mean, because of like a natural disaster or anything, have you ever been stuck somewhere where you play a gig and then you're stuck there for a little while before you can get out?
Not because of a natural disaster, but because of a man-made disaster, ahem. I was in South Africa. This was my first international trip, come to think of it. And so it was during apartheid in 1980, I want to say.
Wow.
And I went to South Africa with Hugh Masekela.
Oh, wow.
And Marion Makeba. In fact, we had to meet them there because they were still in exile. I think both of them left South Africa around the same time, and so had been in exile for like 25 years. And so they were really not allowed back in the country, but some kind of way it was finagled that they could, a tour was set up.
Mm-hmm.
for both of them to do a homecoming tour, right? And so I was in Hugh's band at home in New York, and so, you know, he had his musicians, his New York musicians, Renee McLean, Jackie McLean's son, played saxophone, and Pooch Bell on drums, and Victor Bailey on bass, Don Blackman on piano. And then he had some West African musicians. I think these the two was a guitarist from Ghana and someone else. I can't remember, but we met them at the airport in Johannesburg, We flew from New York to Johannesburg, and I don't know how Hugh and Miriam got there, but they didn't come with us. Like, they got there somehow. So anyway, we get there. We're supposed to do however many weeks, I think at least 2 weeks of touring, nine different cities, and or what are they called there? They probably are they countries in Africa? You know, it's not
State,
like
maybe states or
people think.
countries or
It's
something like that.
states, right? It's not like what people think.
Yeah.
It's people speak totally different. It's like Europe. You
Right.
know, people speak different languages. They have different cultures. It's different. It's not like going to New Jersey from New York.
Right.
So anyway, we were supposed to do nine different states. We get to we're stationed in a free state called Lesotho, right? And so the climate there was a lot different than, I mean, it wasn't like heavy apartheid law in this in Lesotho. So we were able to move about. We got to meet the Africans and the coloreds who were mixed African and whatever. And so we moved about. But in any case, we did one concert. I think it was in Lesotho, live outdoor thing with, you know, thousands of people, just incredible, hot, incredible concert, you know, homecoming. And then we were supposed to move on, and the concert got canceled.
Oh.
Word got out, I guess, and the government, and it was, we can't, did no more shows.
Wow.
And this was back in the day where, or like, I don't know if it was partially because of the time, because of where we were, and the political ramifications of all of that, but we could not leave until our plane tickets, until the date of our return of our plane tickets.
Oh, you couldn't change the, you couldn't, you, nothing. You're this there.
Stuck. Yeah. Stuck in, basically stuck in Lesotho, which was better than being stuck anywhere else, I'm sure, especially for me. Yeah, so stuck in Lesotho and for 2 weeks. Yeah, so we did a couple of makeshift concerts. We did a con so we were at this Holiday Inn in Lesotho, which was like this big deal, you know. It had gambling casinos in it and like all kinds of 24-hour buffet where they let the food just sit and sit and sit and sit until it got eaten. So of course we didn't know that, and we're like young kids, like 20 years old or whatever, and we're like, oh, you know, woo, let's go eat again. So everyone got sick, like ill sick. I remember having to run up. So we did another concert. I think we may have done one or two more concerts. One was in the Holiday Inn's theater, right? And that was the makeshift, you know. And so I remember having to run off stage to go back to my room, hopefully get back to my room, because I had to use the bathroom. That's how sick.
Oh,
And
man.
all of us, except maybe one of the guys in the band, was sick like that. I had to go to the hospital and get, I mean, I don't know what they did for me, but it wasn't very much. It was weird. Yeah,
Man.
so it's different than this, but it's a crisis nonetheless.
Yeah. You know, I'm always interested to hear stories like that, because I don't think a lot of people that come and see you perform or see other musicians perform that are traveling extensively like you do, nobody ever thinks about that. They're just
Yeah.
like, oh, great, Bobby's great tonight. Oh, great. And then, then.
You go from place to place, and oh, what a cool life. Yeah.
It's great life.
Sometimes, yeah.
Well, now you've got a great, great, incredible performance tomorrow night. So it's for the Jazz Foundation of America. Steve Jordan and his wife are the artistic directors. We talked a little bit before we came on, and I'm going to let you talk about it, but it's live on YouTube tomorrow, and there's only two shows. So everybody that's watching this, you can't just tune in some other time. It's Eastern time, so 7 p.m. Chicago time and 9 p.m. Chicago time, 8 p.m. on the East Coast, 10 p.m. on the East Coast. and it's for the Jazz Foundation of America. And tell us a little bit about it, because you're doing actually a duet with somebody really cool too.
Yeah. So the Jazz Foundation of America is a benevolent organization, national organization that aids needy jazz musicians and blues musicians as well, I believe, but don't quote me on that part. But they come to the aid of musicians in need for any reason, really, you know, any hardship, you know, medical, living, whatever. So they were involved, I think, 6 months ago. Kenny Burrell had an issue. And that's, you know, nationally known. It's
yep.
all over the magazines and the internet. The Jazz Foundation was involved in that. And so Steve Jordan, who is a friend of mine and a producer, drummer, he produced my previous record. He's the artistic director. He and his wife Megan are artistic directors for the Jazz Foundation of America. So they do a show, an annual concert. It's like bigger. I'm trying to find the biggest word for a concert. it's an annual fundraiser for the organization at the Apollo Theater, right? So during this show, they present a Lifetime Achievement Award to one or two or however many recipients they feel for that year. And then it's a huge show and, you know, just kind of spanning all genres and, you know, probably cool people in the audience. And you know, when we talk about the lineup for this show tomorrow, you'll get the picture of what
let me put up that
Apollo shows.
I'm gonna put up I'm gonna put up that graphic while you're talking so people can see it. It'll be over here next to me here.
Right. So in lieu of the annual event at the Apollo, keeping with the times, you know, they've decided to do this emergency musicians fund, COVID emergency musicians fund, or musicians emergency fund, right? And so they're doing a virtual concert, and you can see if the graphic's up, I can't see it, but
that's it's up.
What, it what?
I've got it up here. So
okay,
I mean,
cool. Right.
So they can see all the incredible musicians that you're gonna. I mean, it's unbelievable how many people that they got to do something like this.
Yeah.
And
well, that's kind of a testament to Steve's reach in this in the music business. You know, that's how he rolls. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Not to mention, you know, you got Keegan, Michael Key is the MC, and then, you know, you see people like Danny Glover, and it's like, it's cool. Yeah. So I'm really happy to be a part of it. And so he called me and said, yeah, man, I want you to do this thing. You know, I want you to do a duet with Isaiah Sharkey. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, Isaiah and I think Isaiah and I met about, oh, it might have been a year ago when I was playing at the Clipper and with the trio. And this guy sitting in the audience, and he's real kind of laid back and demure and stuff. And he was there for a while. And I noticed, you know, like a black guy in a jazz club sitting by himself. That's not that normal, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So at the end, he kind of comes up, and I'm like, yeah, you know, he says, man, I just wanted to say whatever he said. And I'm like, yeah, man, cool. Thanks, man. What's your name? Like something was up. And he says, Isaiah Sharkey. And I'm like, oh, man. Something. So, you know, that was our first meeting, and then he came out recently to to Andy's, to the jam session, and played. And it was at that point that we said, yeah, man, we need to hook up and we need to do something. So that was that. That was about 6 months ago. And
Yeah.
so Steve called and said, hey, I want you to do this duet with Isaiah. And I'm like, oh, yeah, man, that's funny. We've been talking about doing something. He's like, yeah, I know. Because he and Isaiah play in John Mayer's group.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I was
so.
gonna say that's the thing. Like, I mean, I don't think a lot of people realize it, but like Isaiah, right? He's touring all over the world with Mayer. You're in Chicago and you're flying out and touring all over the place when everybody can tour. There's a lot of guys, as you know, that live in Chicago that tour and play with a lot of heavy duty bands or also have their own and tour all
Their
over the
own
place, but they call
bands.
home Chicago.
That's right. That's it. And so I've kind of never, I don't know if it was, I think initially it was because, partially because of who I am and how I think, but some of it was about me being from New York and having had the rawest kind of things happen when that wasn't, I mean, I was a kid. It wasn't like necessarily supposed to happen, or like they were still miracles to me that I got to do some of the things that I did while I was there. Like, that wasn't written in some kind of, well, maybe it was, but I didn't know about it. So, like, why me? So, when I
Right.
moved here, I've had the feeling that these things can happen to us, to me, to us, to anyone. If you put the work in and you do what you're supposed to do and you want to do it, then it can happen. And that's how people are, more and more people. I'm not saying nobody thought this way. We had great artists that were here. Jody Christian, Eddie Harris was here, Vaughn. We had people that thought that way, more broadly, or whatever, however you want to say it, but live here. That's all it is. I mean, everybody has to live somewhere, and not everyone lives in New York, chooses to live in New York, has to live in New York to have reach. So yeah, there are a lot of guys here, and I'm working on something now that kind of has that in mind, and that kind of underlying theme.
Well, and I should preface this too, because you and I filmed a feature interview for Chicago Jazz Magazine right before COVID-19 came in and shut everything down for the most part, because we were going to drop it in May. And all hell broke loose here, so we're holding it off. But the interview, it's about 50 minutes. I mean, it's a great interview, and I had such a good time interviewing you. But I should just mention, and you don't have to tell the whole story right now, but just so everybody has a perspective, his first gig with Sonny Rollins was when he was 19 in Carnegie Hall. So,
16,
oh,
sorry.
16.
Just
Oh,
turned that number upside down.
Jesus.
Yeah, no, I know. It's a 19, 16, what, either way,
Yeah, right.
right? It's crazy.
Yeah,
Yeah.
16 in Carnegie Hall. So I mean, you ended up coming to Chicago, and you still call Chicago your home base, but you're originally from New York. And you've been one of those few musicians back in the day when you moved to Chicago that still toured everywhere. Didn't even think that, I mean, New York's 2 hours away, so you can always go play in New York, and you always had the connections, and you always continuously move forward. And you and I talk about that in the interview. You're always thinking forward momentum, and like what you just said with this new recording project, you're always thinking something different, pushing forward. But that's part of being a creative artist, right? I mean, that's the whole thought process. You have to keep moving forward, even during COVID-19. You got to keep moving forward, and that's the cool thing that Steve Jordan put together with this whole Zoom thing online tomorrow, is that he could have canceled the whole thing and skipped a year, but instead, he's forward thinking and saying, no, man, let's make this thing happen, right?
So I said, well, what do you need? And he says, two cameras, multi-track. I'm like, okay, cool. Let me see what I can do. Like, damn, where am I gonna, where am I gonna go to get that done? So, there are a couple of places here in Evanston where I am that have the capability to do that. And so I called them, and one of them responded, and we did it again. And we did, stayed our kept our distance,
Yeah.
and
Well, I thought
multi-tracked and recorded three cameras, I believe.
you and I were talking before we came on, and that was my first question because there's a lot of artists, they're doing the recording in your place and then sending the recording to somebody
Yeah,
else and recording to
some of
somebody
that
else.
too.
Yeah, but I mean, you guys were actually able to connect because I know Studio 5, that's a big theater too, so you guys could be separated enough where you could, safely perform and feel comfortable. But so what did you guys play? Can we actually talk about what you played, or is it going to be a
Yeah, we
surprise
played.
tomorrow?
Well, some of it I think is going to be a surprise still. But a little birdie told me. But anyway, yeah, we did a couple of tunes. We did the standard "We'll Be Together Again," and then we did "That's the Way of the World." Yeah.
And you
So.
guys never played together before, right?
No.
How do you approach, I mean, two guitars, you're doing a duet with two guitars. I mean, how do you approach that? Because I mean, you're used to running your trio, quartet, you're playing, and you're the guitar player, you're playing lead, you're comping. But I mean, how do you tell him, okay, you comp here, I'll comp there? Or do you guys just feel it out and just start playing and say, okay, that's cool, let's do it this way?
Yeah, basically the latter. I mean, and I did this, I don't know if you're looking at me, but let's like any other configuration, it really starts with listening. Listen first, then play. Or if you're playing first, you better be listening as well. So that's it. And we had no set arrangement. I knew we would have to make that on the fly, like right before. So that adds another level of layer of pressure, because now we got to remember who does what where, and what, and then you're in the heat of the moment, at the same time with those juices going, that can scramble stuff. So, but that's what we do as musicians. And so, yeah, we just played, and okay, you take that melody, you take that part of the melody, and then we do this, and then that, and then okay, let's run it down, and then okay, wait, oh, I screwed up. Okay, all right, we got it, let's go. So we were in there for 2, 2.5 hours, just we got to set up, and there's all of that too. So, yeah, and we did two
Well,
tunes.
you guys probably, I mean, you probably had a good time anyways. It's good to
We
get
had
out
a
of
great time.
the
Oh
house,
man,
probably, right?
I was taking pictures of myself like leaving the house, like with my guitar case, like I'm going out to play,
Well, so
Oh.
everybody can check this out. So it's the Jazz Foundation of America. So I'm assuming when you go on YouTube, if it doesn't pop right up, it's going to be live at 7 p.m. Chicago time, 8 p.m. Eastern, and also again 9 p.m. and then 10 p.m. Eastern, and it'll pop up on YouTube. But if it doesn't, Jazz Foundation of America, and this is a fundraiser, and the Jazz Foundation of America. Obviously, what Bobby said, they've been around for a long time. So this isn't just something that pops up for COVID-19. They've been around for a long time. They've been supporting jazz musicians and helping a lot of different musicians, that fall on hard times. So it's an important foundation. It's important to give. And I know there's probably going to be a donation button underneath the video, and you'll be able to support even with 5, 10, 15, 20 bucks. Everything goes a long way. All these musicians are getting together and doing this, and in this time of need, we all know that this kind of a foundation is even more of an asset to a lot of musicians across the world right now because of what's happening. Nobody's working. There aren't any performances. There isn't anything happening, So I mean, so everybody should tune in tomorrow night. Now, before we take off, and again, I'm trying not to go down the wormhole, so we're not talking a lot about Bobby's career because we could talk for like 3 hours about it, and you can catch that on the feature interview, which will come out. I think we're going to shoot for July. We're going to play it by ear, and see when we want to drop it. But it's a incredible interview. But let's just touch a little bit because I want to talk a little bit about you've got to finish out the teaching semester because you're on faculty up at NIU, an incredible jazz program at NIU. You had to shut everything down up there, obviously, come back home and do some teaching online. And we talked a little bit before we got on about that. Just let's talk a little bit because I loved your perspective that it was different, but in some cases you were able to connect with the student just in a little bit different way, right? I mean, did you have to change the way your philosophy of teaching to finish out the semester doing it remotely rather than in person?
No, I didn't have to change my philosophy. Actually, my philosophy was enhanced, believe it or not, by the situation. What I mean is that, so when this happened and we got the, we got word that we would have to adjust our teaching methods and, you know, use various mediums, blah, blah, blah. I immediately started, my first thought was, damn, I was just getting comfortable, you know, with the whole process. You know, it's a 90-minute drive one way for me, and just it's intense. The work is intense, and you know, I was getting. I mean, I felt great about it from the beginning, but you know, I had to get used to it. And so This is like the second the break, the spring break of the second semester. So now I feel like okay, you know, and then this. So now, okay, now I got to readjust again. All right. So the teaching online part, the private lessons, that's not like I can envision that. I could envision that easily. The classroom things, not so much. I mean, I'm teaching two classes. And so that I kind of had to wrap my brain around how I would make that work. But then for the online lessons again, I started to think like this would be a great opportunity to make my students do some things that I've been saying and trying to make them do since day one, but they just never do. And part of the reason why I think is because they can come into the lesson and we play. And so I'm their accompanist. So they don't have to be responsible for accompanying other than behind me, at which point often things would fall apart, like literally fall apart. And so, you know, that was kind of like how it went. But when this happened, it was like, no, I can assign them projects to give me weekly, which entail them just comping, just accompanying. And that's what I started to do. Like, look, you got to make a backing track, or it's just, you know, you comping four choruses four times around this song without editing. I don't want you stopping. You got to, and I want video so I can see that that's what you're doing. And then you're going to practice over that, but don't worry about the, I just want to see the comping part. And then next week you can show me the video of you actually playing over it. And many students were freaking out. Like I'd see them the following week for the next lesson, and they'd be like, "How'd it go?" And they're like, "Oh." And then, you know, here's the they'd send me the file, and I'm like, "Okay, good, you did it." And they're like, "But man, you know, they're still like breathing heavy, and it's been done for like 3 days. They're still even heavy. It's like it took 100 times for me to do. I took like this was the 100th take. You don't understand." And I'm like, "Yeah, I do understand. And now you understand. This is what it takes."
Yeah.
And I swear it's incredible. I did not expect really the kind of improvement that I saw by the end of the semester. It was really like heartwarming.
Yeah. Well, and you've been teaching really for a long time too, you know. I mean that and to still have something like that where all of a sudden it's like a breakthrough for you that you didn't realize, you know? I mean that's the silver lining in this whole situation, huh?
That's well, you know, that's kind of what we have to hopefully, you know, it's hard to speak about that part of it, like finding silver linings. Everybody's situation is so different, and some of us are less fortunate, or some of us are going through. I have a dear friend of 40 years. How old am I? 40 years, whose mom just passed the other day. from this, you know. So everybody's situation is different, and so far be it for me to say, you know, oh, find a silver lining or,
Right.
you know, all any of that. But I just know I'm just grateful and feel fortunate to be able to keep on going and to work and to try to help. I'm just, you know, trying to do what I'm supposed to do. That's
Yeah.
it.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. That's great. And, you know, I always love talking to you because it's inspirational, and I love hearing all of the different things that you have going on, and you're constantly moving forward even through whatever we're going through right now. But
Let me talk about the record.
Yes.
Yeah, because that, okay, so that's like another kind of serendipitous thing. I feel like in some ways my life kind of works like this. Like, okay, so I knew I wanted to record again, and I knew, you know, we may have even talked about that in the interview, and I have some things in mind that, you know, I'm kind of working on.
Mm-hmm.
But about 3 weeks before the mandatory stay at home order came in, an old friend of mine, childhood friend of mine, Pooji Bell, the drummer.
Oh yeah.
Who I've known since fourth grade. He was there. So the day I got my first guitar, we were in the same class, and I pulled him home, you know, walk home with me right quick during lunchtime. I want to show you my new guitar. And all I could do was hold it up to him to see. I could not play anything. So, and we went on to make music and, you know, play on records and do all kinds of, you know, we had that first like real professional gig together and the whole thing. So anyway, his son is now entering college and has a band who he's had through high school, and they got a gig at Andy's. They got a gig at Andy's on a Friday and Saturday, the early sets on Friday and Saturday of 3 weeks before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And so Pooji and the family, the, you know, and all the other kids in the band came to Chicago. So, you know, I grabbed my family and we went down and we watched them, and Pooji and I sat in, and it was a great time. So during that time, he played some things for me from his new record, and at one point he says, "Man, are you recording now?" And I said, "No, I mean, yeah, but, you know, not like, yeah, kind of, sorta."
Mm-hmm.
And then I looked at him, and I'm like, "Why?" You know, I could read something, and he's like, "Cause we should do something. You know, I'd like to produce something." And I was like, "Oh yeah, man, exactly what I, that's exactly the direction that I'm looking to go in, you know, having heard the things that he was doing." And, you know, it was kind of like the 21st century process based, you know, where everybody could do their parts at home, and involved sampling and this and that, and just the kinds of things that I was interested in doing, and looking for a way to get involved in. And so there it was, boom. So fleshed out, agreed on what we were going to do. He immediately started sending me tracks. I immediately started playing, thinking about people, you know. We decided that we would, you know, like to make this a Chicago project, right? And include many people as we could from Chicago as an underlying theme. And boom, then this. Which was fine, because we were already underway, and, you know, it didn't involve going anywhere. So that's what we've been doing since.
So you're in the process. You and I talked about you were talking a little bit about it when we were doing the interview, but there weren't any details yet. So actually, you're formulated this whole thing out. So you're actually in process of putting this thing together then.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if, was I talking about it, because it wasn't.
Well, I think you were talking about doing a recording of some sort, but you weren't sure what it was going to be, because you wanted to do something, but you weren't sure yet, I think, is when we were talking about it. You were talking about doing something in 2020, but you weren't sure what it was going to be.
I don't know if it was, I don't know if I was talking about this. I was probably talking about something else, but I mean, I'd have to see the interview. Maybe this is what I meant, but it sure did happen in a kind of, it's just a serendipitous thing.
Yeah.
And it's been really cool, and it's given
So
me something to do this summer.
the 21st century, meaning is it's probably a mixture on the feature interview when we talk, we go into all of the different genres that influenced you. So I'm assuming that it's kind of a mixture of a lot of different genres that basically make up the Bobby Broome sound is all going to come out on this record, right?
Pretty much that's going to be the glue,
Yeah.
that holds everything together, because it's not, like, to call it a jazz record is, I don't know what that means, other than I'm a jazz musician. So again, it's the glue. There's a, the continuum of black music really is what this is about, which defies genre, really. We don't really think of it that way. Just think of like how the music feels and where it comes from and how it goes and that kind of thing, and everything is cool under that spectrum. So it's different. It's gonna be different.
That's cool, man. That's exciting. I mean, if you're working on it now, you're probably looking at a release in I would imagine like early 2021, late 2020, whatever, something like
Who
that.
knows? Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, sooner than later, as far as I'm concerned, and we'll see. Yeah,
Yeah.
probably right what you just said.
Yeah.
I mean,
Oh, that's awesome, man. Congratulations. And
yeah.
how about that? All roads lead back to Andy's Jazz Club, apparently, too,
Yeah, right. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happened out of Andy's in my life with this, recording and doing different things. Yeah, definitely.
Wild.
Yeah,
Well,
so
hey.
we got Marquise playing and Mike King, the pianist, who
Yeah.
left Chicago, but he's a Chicagoan. Sheree Reed and Rainier Brooks, and it's just
Oh, that's awesome. That's
working on it.
well, good. I'm glad you kind of gave us a scoop here, a little scoop on
Hey, there you go.
the show.
Glad I had one to give.
That's hey. So I'm glad you had one too. That's great. That's great news. All right. So
Yeah.
before we wrap it up, everybody should check out Jazz Foundation of America tomorrow, YouTube Live. And if you don't find it right on your feed, look it up. Jazz Foundation of America. Bobby's going to be on there doing a performance with Isaiah Sharkey, which is going to be incredible, along with a lot of other artists, as you saw in that graphic. I mean, it's going to be something to watch, that's for sure. And also donate to, because there'll be a foundation donation button, I'm sure, right below the feed. So be sure to give to that foundation because it's very important for all of the year, not just because of COVID-19. And of course, check out all of Bobby's recordings and everything Bobby is happening and all of his past recordings and everything at bobbybroome.com and all the social media networks and platforms and everything that all of us are on. I know he's constantly on those and pumping out good stuff. And man, it was great catching up. I'm glad we could talk and we could preview this performance that you have tomorrow night live on YouTube. And I'm glad we caught up and hopefully we'll be dropping that feature interview in the next couple months and everybody can really see it. It's a really great interview with you and I appreciate you still sitting down with me for that because that was a lot of fun. So.
Yeah, I appreciate you too and everything, and for having me today.
No,
This is great.
definitely. Stay safe and we'll
You
talk to you
too.
soon, Bobby. Thanks so much.
All right. Okay, everybody.
All right, Bobby Broome, that was fun, man. I'm telling you, wait till you see this feature interview because he goes in depth and talks about his background. And for those of you that aren't quite familiar with Bobby, you should check over on his Facebook or on his website, I should say, bobbybroome.com. He's got a lot of recordings, a lot of all of his recordings are incredible. They're interesting. He spans all these different genres. That's his playing, but that's his voice. And that's what we go into in that feature interview about finding your voice as a musician, how he found his voice, and that allowed him to play with. The list goes on, but as we discussed, I mean, just the one, right? He played Sonny Rollins when he was 16 in Carnegie Hall. So there you go, right? What were you doing when you were 16? I was driving a car. fingers crossed, and barely trying to play drums. So there you go. He's playing at Carnegie Hall. All right. I digress. So everybody check out Jazz Foundation of America tomorrow, 7 p.m. Chicago time, and again at 9 p.m. Chicago time, and BobbyBroom.com. It was a pleasure having him on. Stay tuned for tomorrow because we've got a great guest coming up tomorrow, and I've got to confirm that that is what I'm doing. Oscar Hernandez is on tomorrow. Yes, and we're going to be at 4 o'clock tomorrow, so Oscar's going to come out. We're going to talk about his incredible group that he's got a brand new recording out, the Oscar Hernandez. I believe it's called his orchestra, but I have all my notes, but they all got discombobulated, so bear with me. But Oscar's an incredible musician, and I'm excited to have him on. He's from New York, so we'll be talking to him at 4 o'clock tomorrow. And then on Friday, we are going to have Harrier, who does our reviews, some of our reviews in Chicago Jazz Magazine. He has been writing reviews for us probably for the past 4 years. Harrier Attarian, he's going to come on. Dr. Harrier Attarian, he's going to come on. We're going to talk about some of the reviews he wrote, but also we're going to talk about his background. He grew up in Lebanon during the Civil War, and he's got some incredible stories about listening to jazz in a bunker when the Civil War is going on around him. And he's actually Dr. Harrier Attarian, and he's a brain surgeon now in Chicago. So we're going to talk about that, and lots of great conversation on Friday. And then a programming note, starting next week, I'm moving the show to 6 p.m. So we're going to start doing the show at 6 p.m. every night right here on Chicago Music Revealed and Chicago Jazz Magazine. So that's moving over to 6 p.m. starting next week, because we wanted to do it so we could preview some of these live performances that happen in the evening, and we can also kind of catch a different audience that might be kind of finished up with their workday and coming in. I love everybody watching at 4, so we'll just push it to 6 and hopefully even get a bigger audience. Also coming up on Friday, I completely forgot to look down, but of course, Dave Katzman's going to be back. He's going to be doing his Chicago Blues and Beyond, Blues in Chicago and Beyond report, and that's coming up on Friday as well. So we're going to do that at 4 p.m., and then Harrier will be on right after him. And, of course, all the information at ChicagoMusicRevealed.com, ChicagoJazz.com, ChicagoJazzMagazine.com, and thanks to the Epiphany Center for the Arts for presenting this show. As I always say, if you like this show, please share it. Please like it. Tell the neighbors. Tell your friends. Call the grandkids. Chicago Music Revealed tomorrow, 4 p.m. right here. Thanks for watching and stay safe. And I will see you tomorrow on the next broadcast.